Welcome to Luxury News Weekly, your number one source for luxury news. I'm your host, Simba Wakatama.
And I'm your host, Elizabeth Solaru.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another exciting episode of Luxury News Weekly. We've got everything from sneakers to watches, celebrities included. All right, this is going to be an exciting episode. So let's get into it. First, we are talking about a signed Nike Air Jordan 1 going up for sale on eBay for $250,000. Why, might you ask, is this so expensive? Well, because it's a prototype pair actually made for Michael Jordan himself to try on, and it is signed by him as well. Elizabeth, what is your take?
Well, as you know, we do talk about the sale of sneakers in this room. Sotheby's have auctioned quite a number of them. So I thought, let me do a deep dive into Michael Jordan and how the Air Jordans came to be created. That is actually a very interesting story, more than the pair of sneakers themselves. Because when Michael Jordan joined the Chicago Bulls as a rookie player, nobody obviously knew he was going to be great or anything like that. So the real story is that the official supplier of footwear, of sneakers to the team, was actually Converse. Now, what happened was that Michael Jordan himself, he liked Adidas. That was his favorite brand. And he tried to get a deal with them, but they didn't come through. But his agent brought Nike to him. So Nike actually came to him. And when Nike came to him, he wasn't interested because he just felt that, you know, they at that time did not make the kind of sneakers that was suitable for basketball. So he said no. So his agent then went to his mother. And then his mother said to him, look, Michael, I'm going to talk to you and you are going to listen. And his father at the family meeting said, look, you're never going to get this kind of money on the table. They are offering you a life-changing sum to represent their brand. So go with it. So he then said yes to Nike. Nike, of course, were very excited. And Nike gave him a shed load of money. Now, the story doesn't end there. What happened was that there was a rule that, number one, your trainers the trainers that you wear for basketball can only be white, and it had to have the color of your jersey on it. So whenever Michael Jordan wore a pair of Nikes, he was actually breaking the rules, and he was fined $5,000 every time. And of course, Nike were very happy to pay, because the notoriety was bringing them a massive amount of publicity.
I can imagine.
So you can imagine. So the long and short of it was that they projected that in the first year, if they sold $3 million worth of trainers, they would be happy. They would be singing to the bank. Guess how much they sold in the first year?
Oof, I'm thinking $10 million. Sounds reasonable.
No, you're not close at all. They sold $126 million of sneakers in the first year because everybody went crazy for Air Jordans, just like that. So that, to me, was more of an interesting story as to the background of these Air Jordans. So that is why they are so expensive now. So the provenance, everything around it, how he had to fight to kind of like wear that brand, a brand he wasn't interested in. If I were him right now, I would kiss the feet of my agent. This is why it's good to have a good agent, guys.
Yes, yes. And the thing is with this shoe as well, it was really a shoe for basketball players, whereas the Converse, they don't really give you the support you need and the protection you need. So this was a functional, beautiful, and kind of exciting shoe when it came out. And yes, this is, again, a 1985 prototype for Michael Jordan. So It is quite crazy. And this leads us right into our next story, which again, we find a Michael Jordan shoe. Okay, now this is the most expensive sneaker ever sold at auction. And of course, it was sold by our lovely friends at Sotheby's. We love you. We appreciate you. You need to come on the podcast. You've done a clubhouse room with us, and we really enjoyed that. So just plugging that in there. All right. Well, every chance I get, I'm going to plug that. So,
of course,
these sneakers sold for $1.472, let's just call it $1.5 million at Sotheby's. Okay. This was very recent. This sale happened last Sunday. So this is a very recent news. Now, here's a pair of 1984 Nike Airships. Yeah, what do you think of this?
Well, I just think that there is a reason why these, you know, sneakers are just selling just like that, because people aren't just buying sneakers. They're buying a piece of him, a bit of history. And in the game of basketball right now, there are one or two really, really notables and greats. But in my view, for his generation, nobody comes even close to him. So, you know, I'm not surprised at all that they are fetching this amount at all. But having said that, the 2008 Nike Air Yeezy 1 prototypes, which obviously the rapper Kanye Ye, whatever he calls himself now, wore to the Grammys, that went on sale for $1.8 million. Again, at a private sale held by Sotheby's last April. So to people who collect sneakers, this to me seems like an investment class that is on the up. And I think we did a room on investment classes, and I can't remember if sneakers was part of the top 30 that was listed. I need to double check, but I have a feeling that sneakers was actually listed as an investment class.
Yeah, it's very strange, the sneaker sneakerhead culture, because some of these sneakers, they don't really appreciate much over time. Some of them do. It's not as predictable as some other investment classes, which is why, you know, you find not as many people, of course, fetching these high price tags. But some brands are very consistent. Nike has all the most expensive sneakers, basically. They hold most of the records for expensive sneakers. And of course, Yeezys, they sell out all the time. When they come out, you can easily resell them. So it's a very different class. I would put it more on the speculation than investment class, but I can see it totally becoming that in the near future.
Oh, absolutely. And I hope it does, actually, because sneakers are cultural. I mean, there was a time you wouldn't wear sneakers, you know, to go out. They were strictly for sport. I'm probably showing my age now, but now they are trendy. You know, you can get so many variations. You can get those with platforms. I mean, the materials that is used, the technology. So, yes, I will not be surprised if they become an investment class of their own.
Oh, yeah. There's very few things that can carry culture on your body like sneakers can. So definitely going to be a big part of future investment sales. It's a matter of when, really, and it just depends on how these big players like Nike, well, look, it just depends on what Nike decides to do. They're cracking down right now on a lot of resellers and a lot of they call them like custom sneaker makers. They're really cracking down on that. So I think they're going to bring the control back in. And while that might not be the best thing for the sneaker culture, it certainly is going to be a good thing for sneaker investors, because it'll control the market and stabilize sales.
It's such a shame, though, that they're cracking down on the, you know, the customization. I suppose they do need to protect their brand. But I have seen lots of TikTok videos are, you know, of people who customize their trainers, or they do it for clients. And my goodness, they come up with the most amazing, incredible hand-painted designs. So if I were Nike, I would actually create an ultra luxe section, you know, or department where you can have your sneakers customized for, I don't know, $500, $1,000 or whatever. If I were them, that's what I would do. I would actually embrace that culture, that side of things of customization, because that's what Gen Zs and millennials, that's what they're after. And a lot of crypto millionaires and, you know, tech millionaires, that is what they embrace. That is what they buy. So that's what I would do. But I'm pretty sure they're probably way ahead of me anyway. And they're probably thinking the same.
I mean, they do customization now, and they do it, you know, in pop-ups as well, or you can go to the store and, you know, customize here and there and then come and pick it up later. So they are very much leaning into that space more and more. Now, we're not talking about at the level that the these customizers go, because they completely tear down the sneaker and rebuild it. You know,
exactly.
Yeah, that's a different level. And but I do know they are trying to, they're not trying to kill that. They're just trying to bring it in house. It's kind of the same thing as every company right now is trying to control the resale market if their resale market is valuable. We've seen how many department stores are trying to open rent the used clothing things, or they're opening their own certified resale market, right? Like a lot. So this is not going to go away. You know, they're just trying to put a lid on it.
Oh, absolutely. And I don't blame them, because they do need to protect their brand. But I kind of envision like a super, super luxe, really, really high end sourcing, unusual skins, you know, unusual materials, maybe embedding a lot of technology, maybe voice technology or something like that. You know, because imagine, I mean, this is me again, you know, imagination going crazy. Imagine you have the technology built in your shoes that tells you if you're, you know, the sole is wearing out, or if you've got scuff marks, or, you know, if your gait is uneven, that sort of thing, you know, maybe the health of your feet, who knows? but then I'm not a podiatrist.
Yeah, who knows?
But you know, but that's where I'm going, where you can marry the health of your feet with an ultra luxury pair of sneakers. So I put it out there first. If anyone wants to know more, come to me. I'm happy to consult for you.
Yes, amazing. We will always take consultation gigs. That is for sure. We are interrupting this episode to tell you a little bit about the people behind Luxury News Weekly. I'm your host, Simbo Wakatama, the founder and CEO of Volo Bespoke. We personalize jewelry storage for the jewelry you wear. Find me on Instagram or LinkedIn at Simba Wakatama.
I'm Elizabeth Solaru, founder and CEO of Luxury Business Emporium and Elizabeth's Cake Emporium. You can find me on LinkedIn as Elizabeth Solaru or on Instagram as Luxury Business Emporium.
Our next story is LVMH is swapping in a new head of Loro Piana, and they decided to use Dior's Damien Bertrand to do that. Now, Damien was actually the director of Dior Couture, so they're moving him to Italy to do the new job for Loro Piana. Obviously not as popular a brand as Dior is, but this is, in my take, an interesting switch, which I don't know if I quite understand, but I do know that a lot of Italian brands right now, they need help because they were hit so hard by the pandemic that now they're undervalued, but they have a lot of potential, right? Because yes, they were hit hard, but they have a lot of room to grow. So LVMH, when they see an opportunity, They're going to take it. What's your take on this?
Well, several things jump at me. Number one, this is obviously a turnaround situation. And the chief exec that's going in has a massive track record of turning around. He did amazing things at Dior Couture, and they're hoping he will do the same here. And the second thing is that this particular brand, Loro Piana, it attracts a very, the older, wealthy class of client, but it hasn't really caught on with a younger generation. So they're hoping to maybe promote it to more, millennials and Gen Zs, et cetera, et cetera. So be prepared for, I don't know, they might want to bring in some influencers. They might want to do some design collaborations with some celebrities or some really, really amazing handbag designers. They might want to bring in somebody young. And we know that LVMH, they've got the money to invest. So they really wouldn't want to do a lot for this brand to make it, one of the jewels in their crown. And they can do that because right now, yes, Hermes is doing phenomenally well. However, there are people who do not want to buy Hermes anymore because they've already bought as many Hermes as possible. And they are looking for the next big thing. And Loro Piana has the provenance. They've got the legacy. So it might just be a question of repositioning, redesigning, and bringing in new blood.
I 100% agree with everything you're saying. It looks like that's going to be the strategy here. My only, concern, and I don't know much about this Damien Bertrand, but couture is very different from ready-to-wear. And all the rules that work for couture don't work for ready-to-wear and vice versa. Now, I'm assuming, of course, he didn't just end up in couture. He has probably got a lot of experience with other kinds of retail, luxury, etc. But what struck me as odd is you're taking a successful person from a successful operation that was really a money sink to begin with. Couture is a market loss leader, right? Like, it loses so much money for these brands.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but someone who finally turns that around, you take them, and you put them somewhere else in a not so well-known, not as well-known brand as far as the portfolio is concerned, and, much smaller operation. So I'm just confused. I don't see what's going on, of course, but then again, I don't know much about the person, so.
Yeah, I mean, he's meant to be a rising star. So it could be one of these things where sometimes in a company as big as LVMH, they will rotate certain talented individuals. So I used to be a headhunter, and sometimes internally, some companies have a policy of rotating certain people around. So yes, he's worked in couture, but they may need him to get his hands dirty, with ready to wear. So he has an understanding of different parts of the business and not just couture. So that could also be another strategy. He could also bring, maybe they've also found that in Loro Piana, there might not be as much, let's say, and I'm just using this as an example, maybe attention to detail, maybe precision, whatever, as you would find in couture. So they might say, okay, he could bring that over there. So who knows? But from what I understand, they've actually just had their first collaboration, actually. So, we were talking about, Damien might bring in collaboration, et cetera, et cetera. They had their first collaboration with a Japanese streetwear star, Hiroshi Fujiwara, in a bid to revamp its image and win attention from younger customers. So there you have it. Just like I suspected, they have done that. It's a go-to strategy. We've seen it before. But I would say half the time, it doesn't actually work. Because when you have a to have a successful collaboration, you can't just do collaboration because, you know, you need to prop something up. It's got to make sense. It's got to be very beautiful, you know, really well thought out and beautifully executed. And then you promote the hell out of it. Yeah. An example is we were talking last week about Balenciaga. So they've done collaboration upon collaboration. Gucci, they've done the same, but their collaborations always seem to be well thought out. And the one thing they do, even if the collaborations, you know, are not well received, they are promoted to the nth degree.
And yes, they're good or bad.
Exactly, good and bad.
Yeah.
So yeah, so let's wait and see. Let's see what the future holds for Laura Piana.
I'm excited to see what happens. And I'm interested to see what happened to the person there that Damien's replacing, Fabio D'Angelo. Wow, I got through that. Okay. But yeah, because I suspect that it might be they have no choice and the current executive is leaving or retiring or any number of things. Or who knows, sometimes it's a scandal and you have to get rid of the person very quickly. It could be anything. It could be anything. So we'll watch the space and we'll keep up to date with that. Now, speaking of Dior, they have a Brooklyn Museum exhibit right now going on that is supposed to take you through their 70-plus history of the House of Dior. And from the pictures, it is something of a spectacle. I absolutely love it. I love these kind of museum pop-ups, fashion pop-ups. You see the archives, and they really feature all the crazy things they did over time. I just love seeing the progression of a brand and the creativity.
Oh, absolutely. And this exhibition, from my understanding, it was really weird because a friend of mine actually went to the exhibition this weekend, and she posted a video of it on TikTok. So I was able to see snippets. And for me, it looked like it was a combination of actual garments and outfits with technology. There was an interactive bit as well. So it looked really, really cool. So you got to see all these masterpieces beautifully curated. There was a bit called the Enchanted Garden, which was housed within the inner ring of the installation. And it just looked incredible. So Dior, again, exquisite, exquisite taste, exquisitely curated museum pieces. She was just showing everything. I was so envious, and I wish the exhibition will come to... I believe it came to London. I could be wrong.
Well, they usually do. I know Louis Vuitton invested a lot in creating a movable museum. Like, they can pack it up and move it around the world. And it was quite a crazy thing to see. So I would not be surprised if Dior kind of does the same, just at maybe a smaller scale, because most of these big brands do tour, and they tour usually with pop-ups or their archives.
Absolutely. Yes, I was right. It did come to London. It came to London in 2019, and I remember that almost everyone I know went. I kept putting it off. Oh, I'll go. And then the pandemic hit.
Oh, no.
I know, right? But yes, it did come to London. It was at the Victoria and Albert Museum, and it was fantastic. It was just really, really good. You know, because one thing I love about Dior, especially Dior of the 50s, the lines, they created the most incredible and elegant lines to their dresses. And it was, you know, I remember distinctly, there was a dress that was worn by Princess Margaret, the Queen's sister. And it looked so beautiful. And a friend of mine who went said, you know, it was the waist was so tiny because women in those days obviously had much tinier waists. But yes, it did come to London, actually. So I'm not surprised at all that for the Brooklyn Museum, they decided to make it, you know, fashion meets art meets technology.
Amazing. I wish it came to Toronto here so I could take a look, see for myself. But looks like I'm going to have to make a trip down to Brooklyn. Now, our last story for today, we're talking about a particular watch that belongs to a particular celebrity, Drake. Now, it was Drake's birthday very recently, and so he was gifted. Well, I don't know if it was gifted, but let's just say this. He was able to source a very rare Richard Mille, which is... there's a bit of contention around the exact reference number. The internet is saying it's an RM 5602. Some people are saying it's an RM 056. If you're not into it, that doesn't matter. So let me describe this for you. It's got a solid crystal, sapphire case, I believe. And the actual dial is kind of skeleton. You can see right through it. Very classic kind of Richard Mille like feel, look in terms of the form. But it is apparently, according to our sources, a very, very rare watch and retails at about $1.7 million. Okay, they say only 5 were ever made. Isn't that something?
Wow. I mean, Drake obviously is known for his love of watches. And he absolutely went to town on this one. I think I've had a look at the watch. All I see is very, very complicated dials and I can't, you know, to me, it looks very busy. That's all I'm going to say. I know it's rare. I know it's rare. And I know technically it would have taken all, you know, the precision. You know, I can't even imagine sitting down and designing something that complicated in my head. But to me, it looks really busy and it looks slightly messy. Sorry, Drake. I preferred the other one he got, the Patek Philippe that he got that looks like the Queen's. Watch, I much prefer that, but you know what?
One was very dainty, yeah.
Yeah, maybe that's why I preferred it, but yeah. He does love his watches, and he has got someone who, he's very obsessive about, archiving or chronicling all his watches, and well done, Drake. Would I spend $1.65 million on this? Probably not, but then I'm not as rich as Drake.
And it's a huge watch, too. I think it'll break your wrist. This thing is humongous. That's the one thing I don't like, personally, big watches. My wrists aren't that big, so I can't do Hublot, really. I can't do Richard Mille. I can't do Jacob & Co. They're too big. But Patek, that's fine. You know, Rolex, that's fine. And I especially love, any older, smaller timepieces. And I like the watch for the story, or even a Jaeger LeCoultre, that's fine with me too. But yeah, look, good for him. It's a rare watch. What are you going to do? To each their own.
Exactly. And to be fair, at least we know that the watches tend to appreciate in value, especially if they're very rare pieces like that. So, you know, he buys, he keeps, and at least he's got an investment class just in case, you know, he decides to leave the rap game.
Exactly. Drake is known for quality, not taste. Let's put it that way.
Oh, dear.
And I think you'll hear more about that, about why I'm saying that when we do one of our special Luxury News Weekly editions on worst things ever on Luxury News Weekly.
Yes, he. I think he will feature in two categories for sure.
For sure. Well, that has been everything for this week. I hope you enjoyed the stories. Of course, you can always follow us on Instagram. Check the show notes for all our information. And we will see you again next week. This has been Luxury News Weekly, your number one source for luxury news. These are your top luxury news stories this week. Firstly, a pair of 1985 Nike Air Jordan 1s have been listed on eBay for $250,000. Also, a different pair of 1984 Nike Air Jordans become the most expensive sneakers ever sold on auction for $1.47 million. This was auctioned by Sotheby's. LVMH swaps in Dior's Damien Bertrand to lead Loro Piana. Damien is currently the managing director of Christian Dior's Couture. Also, Christian Dior has an exhibition at the Brooklyn Museum. The exhibition is called Christian Dior, Designer of Dreams, and it features a number of Dior's archival designs as well as an integration of technology and art. Lastly, Drake snags a rare Richard Mille watch for his recent birthday. Though there is a bit of debate whether it is an RM5602 or an RM056, one thing is for sure, it is very rare and very expensive. This watch could have cost Drake up to $2 million. These have been your luxury stories this week.